And you're very welcome back to the second hour of the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you have just joined us. Hope you're all very well this Monday morning, the last Monday of July for 2023. Right, some of your comments coming in over the course of the morning. Greg, I don't like the way newscasters describe a serious assault with the person having non-life-threatening injuries. You could be left with various broken bones, left disabled, or left with fairly minor bruising and still classified as non-life-threatening. Well, I do understand what you're saying, but obviously the victim has to have their personal circumstances respected. Non-life-threatening injuries means that they aren't going to lose their life over the head of it, but it is described often as a serious assault. So a serious assault does include the things that you talk of, various broken bones and what have you. But it's just out of respect for the victim. So it's described as serious, so people know that it was a serious assault, but non-life-threatening injuries means that they've gone to hospital, been assessed, and they're stable, and they're not likely to succumb to their injuries. I understand that it doesn't tell the full story, and I know there's a recent case as well in our own county, in Ardra, where someone was assaulted and serious injuries. So I do understand what you're saying, but I also understand the way the words have to be used. A caller says, why do taxpayers have to subsidise businesses who are getting money for their electricity bills? Surely we could all be in business if our bills were paid for us. Business is incredibly important, though. They're facing the same, in fact, much more as a percentage of their income, bills, electricity bills. And if they go under, it has a huge impact on society as a whole, because people lose jobs, mortgages don't get paid, people need to go on to benefits potentially. So I can see the logic in helping businesses out as well. In the incident you referred to in yesterday's match, the referee was going to issue a yellow card, but when the player demonstrated against him, he decided the issue of a yellow card, declined it and gave a free instead. The game wasn't as exciting as I'd expected, but I think the referee had a good game. As for being from Meath, there is no love lost between Meath and Dublin. It's a bit like Donegal and Tyrone. As a neutral observer, I think the best team on the day won. That comes in from Sam. Oh, sorry, it doesn't come in from Sam. I think the best team on the day won, Sam. All right, okay. But yeah, as I say, I might be conflating a couple of issues because I had the ears pulled off me. Ireland have been very poor, says this listener. We can still string two decent passes together. The standard of this World Cup in general is bad, very hard to watch. Well, I haven't had an opportunity to watch very much of it at all. Both Donegal girls are named on the bench, by the way. That's just one piece of information we weren't able to bring you before 10. So hopefully both Amber and Kira see some match time today. Significant amounts where they can make an impact as well. It's interesting, Amber's listed on the team sheet as a defender. The public concern on the issue of mass immigration is too great to ignore. Results of polls show that 75% of Irish people think Ireland has taken in too many asylum seekers. That is one take on that indeed. The A5 road from Newtown Stewart to Omagh is blocked due to a multi-vehicle incident. We're being asked to let you know to please avoid and take alternative routes. Waking up again another morning with a serious, what seems like in terms of disruption, hopefully not injury, but certainly seems like a serious incident on the A5 from Newtown Stewart to Omagh. It's blocked due to a multi-vehicle incident. You're asked to please avoid and take alternative routes. A caller says, hoping for a score draw today with Amber scoring, it would mean underdogs Nigeria would qualify through to the last 16. I see what you're talking about there. So Amber could get on the team sheet and Nigeria could progress. Best of both worlds from that listener's perspective. Does anyone know that if Ireland scores a goal in any of the World Cup matches, the team gets extra money? Does it? Are you asking? Is that a question or a statement? I don't know. It wouldn't be unusual for incentives. I'd be shocked if it made its way to women playing for Ireland. But maybe there are. I don't know. Mark McSharry is so right in what he says. Ridiculous what we are giving to others, and shameful how we're treating our own. Our young people won't ever be able to afford a home, can't get on a doctor's list, and our students who are hoping to go to college are at their wits' end trying to get accommodation. This government has a lot to answer for, they believe, on how they're treating the people of this country. But is there some alternative views out there as well? I mean, like, do you believe the policies that are being followed at the moment are correct? And if so, why? 086 60 25000. More than happy to read them out as well. 086 60 25000. Maybe you feel the government's hands are tied. They're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. I'm just putting that out there to see what you think. Okay, we're joined now by John McLaughlin, who is Director of JML Transport. John, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you keeping?
Good, Greg.
Right. Yeah, indeed. That's good. I suppose it is only 16 minutes past 10. Right. You're joining us to make people aware that they may not be aware of a levy that comes into force tomorrow. Give us the background to this levy, John.
Yeah, there was a £10 charge per truck crossing the border up until just before COVID. And then the British government decided to pull it off whenever COVID started really bad and whatever. And they've done that. But we got notification about a month, 6 weeks ago to say it was coming back on tomorrow morning. I've been saying it to people over the weekend. I was talking to two other haulers just literally 15 minutes ago, and I said, mind your charge tomorrow. And he says, what charge? I said, £10 charge across the border tomorrow morning. If you don't pay £10, you will have a minimum fine of £300.
And what is this charge for, and who's it paid to, and how?
That's paid to the British government for the use of their roads. And yet the Irish government's given the British government I don't know how many millions for to do the A5 and do everything else, and here we go again. Yeah.
And how is it paid? How is it collected, John?
You have to pay the British government. You get a number and a thing in Britain, and you subscribe to that. They usually give you, if you put the lorry on for a year, it's usually about £1,000 to £1,200 per year. And if you're paying daily, it's £10 per day. So if one of my addicts over 12 ton, if one of my addicts goes in, and this has happened to me on two or three different occasions, whenever, just before COVID, I come back to the yard, jumped out of one lorry, jumped in another lorry and headed up the north, and the next time Volsha pulled me in, £300 fine on the spot, seized the lorry, pulled her up, can't move, so was paid. I forgot to tell Breed that I took the wrong lorry with me, and Breed forgot to pay the £10 charge, £300 fine.
Wow, straight in. So does that give you access for the day to the roads, or if you cross
it's
out and
day.
In?
It, yeah.
It's for the day?
For a 24-hour period.
And that adds up.
You go to England for 3 days.
Yeah.
Oh, it all adds up. It's all money. Like, it's all serious money. And again, it's going to be the customers' money. We're going to have to pass it on again. But it's just very frustrating because as far as... We're giving the British government in Northern Ireland a lot of money to extend the A5 and do this, do that, do that on, and then they turn around and do this. I don't know. I don't think it's very fair. All Northern Ireland lorries and English lorries can come to Ireland, and there's not a word said about it.
Yeah, and margins are tight too. You could argue, is it anti-competitive as well? Does it give Northern Irish businesses a competition advantage?
It does. It does in certain ways, and the same with the fuel. Like the fuel, there's no excuse. I think the fuel went up nearly 10 cents a litre this week. Mm. Why did it up? No one can tell me.
So is it the case that this is enforced on the border, or if you stop travelling in the north, you have to have proof that you've paid this £10?
No, they will. Volsha has the same as the new guard cars or new police cars now.
Number plate recognition, right.
So if you can imagine the Volsha car coming out of Oma heading for Newton Stewart, and he meets my lorry going up the road, and the minute my registration number comes up, it'll just show up on his car. You did not pay, turn around, £300 fine.
Wow.
But the difference is they won't turn around and say, oh, John, it's okay. So pay tomorrow, but the lorry will be parked and will be seized until the money is paid.
And I suppose, too, in terms of paying for it yearly, you'd have to have some certainty of your business to put that money out in advance, and then you have to say, well, is it better off doing it day by day, or what's the story?
That's thousands and thousands of pounds. They could probably have to pay about 12,000 this afternoon, sterling, for the put the lorries on for the year. Because, and that's just me. I'm small compared to the local boys here, Duffy Express, and people like that, and they've got groupies, people like that, just go through the north every day. Like, it's a lot of money. It's a wide lot of extra expense for nothing.
Yeah, and this is obviously post-Brexit. This is post-Brexit, isn't it? Yeah, and your argument is that, we are committing money to the A5, there's that All-Ireland Rail strategy review that's been launched. There's talk of maybe subsidising Derry City Airport. Yeah, exactly. There's talk of subsidising Derry City Airport down the line. There's calls for that. Yet in the other direction, people like yourself are being charged €10 per day per truck just to simply drive on the roads of Northern Ireland.
Yeah. And do you see the British government giving that much to Mayo for the Keith Knock or some of these guys going, like, rather than giving it? Like, I know Northern Ireland Airport has unbelievable handling. My daughter uses it regular, regular. It is unbelievable. And I can sympathise with them. But there has to be something somewhere, like, you know what I mean? Like, we don't get subsidised to health everywhere with trucks. Like, it's one of the tightest games you'll ever be in.
I'll tell you, £11,000, £12,000, £13,000 is a big chunk of cash out of any business.
It is, yeah.
You know, with all the other costs that you talk of.
Over and above, like, yeah. And the fuel, the way it's rising at the minute, because that's where the Nordic, because I'm just about to, as you well know, in 2008, I was a row then, and I got a rebate for the
that's
truck.
That's right, I remember it, yeah.
As time to start another row, I think, and this time is going to be a very serious row, I think, to be honest with you, because they just can't keep doing what they're doing. Mm. And the argument they're making is that it's all about carbon and all this, like, but when the truth all be known, like, you know, you take a petrol car, you take a diesel car, and you take electric car, and from day one till you go out and sell a car to the garage, which is the most expensive? The electric car by 3 times the price of a diesel car and 5 times the price of a petrol car.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are others will dispute but that's your view. Okay, I guess you.
Yeah, no. But I count everything, and they don't count everything. Mm. They don't count getting their batteries out of foreign countries and taking out the China to make batteries to bring back in to put into electric cars. They don't count that. That's not allowed to count it.
So this £10 levy, is it a Brexit measure or is it an environmental measure? What was the argument for introducing it? I don't seem to recall.
It was a case of both, but they were trying to get more money for the pay for the roads and
so it's a toll, really.
The cost of, yeah, it's a toll, basically. Yes.
Okay,
but
right.
It's a toll that only works one way, not two ways.
Yeah, which is not very fair, is it?
No.
Okay.
No,
John. Listen, as you say,
a lot of people's going to get caught out, like, I don't want somebody having to get a £300 fine because I'd rather pay the £10 than pay the £300. Yeah. So,
as you said earlier on, John, ignorance isn't a defence. They do not negotiate with you. It's £300.
No, they don't.
End of story.
No, I guarantee you, there'll be more Vosa cars out tomorrow on Northern Ireland roads than there will be ever.
So it's just,
they'll be just looking for the money.
Say you just had a run into Strabane. Would you still have to pay
£10?
Really? Wow.
£10.
Okay.
Cross Lifford Bridge, go over to the roundabout, come back, £10.
Wow, that's fascinating.
So, and then anything over 12 tons.
So that's not just lorries. A bus? Would a bus?
The buses is I think the buses has got some kind of
exemption.
They've got some kind of something because of past.
No, that's okay. No, I was just curious if it extended to all heavy vehicles.
Yeah.
All right, John, be warned, if you're a truck driver or a trucking company and you didn't realise this £10 toll effectively for the joy of travelling on Northern Irish roads is back in effect from tomorrow morning. And if you found having not paid it, £300 sterling. All right, listen, thanks very much for that.
Thanks, Greg.
Appreciate it. All right, take care of yourself. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. So we've dealt with a lot of conversations about cash and the use of cash or where you can't use cash. You know, there's been a lot of anger and upset as it relates to access to football matches, for example, dependent on the competition, having to pay cash or buy tickets in advance. The Three Arena, a lot of people upset that you have to use you can't use cash in the Three Arena. Well, the latest thing is the National Ploughing Championships. The organisers of it have defended a decision to move to cashless ticketing for this year's event. In previous years, attendees could purchase their ticket in cash at the gate on the day they wanted to attend. But this year, the National Ploughing Association has been criticised after it insisted that tickets must be pre-purchased online in advance in order to control the numbers of people attending each day. Councillor Frank Roach, Independent, is Mayor of Cork. He joins us now. Good morning, Frank. Thanks for your time.
Hello, Councillor Frank O'Flynn.
O'Flynn, right. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I've got completely the wrong details here in front of me. You're still the mayor of Cork County, though, which is welcome, Frank.
Well, okay. First of all, I'm delighted to be with you this morning. All right. I wish all my good friends up there in the northwest, especially Donegal and the Highland areas there. I love going down the holidays.
Good,
and
good,
I love going up to Kessler. And I'm mayor of Cork for 3 weeks, so I'll be here for 12 months. So I'm the local county, Fianna Fáil County Council here. My area is the Fermoy Mitchellstown area, which is North Cork, and I'm mayor of the county.
Yeah, I suspect I see where someone's made a slight mistake here in confusing you with another mayor down there. Right, okay, anyway. So what do you think of this move by the organisers of the Ploughing Championship? They say this is so they can control numbers of people attending the event on each day. It's not a big thank you for the many tens of thousands that want to attend. Is that your view?
Well, as someone who attends the ploughing year in, year out, whatever part of the country is, it's my often we use it probably is 2 or 3 days. There's all holiday season. Tis the pilgrimage. Tis the local farming community. Now both urban and country are attending. It's also the day that the local schools, the secondary and national, attend. And I think there's a kick in the teeth, and I think there's a step too far. No consultation, no discussion whatsoever. I'd love to know what the committee were thinking of. I cannot see why they're bringing this in, because normally, as you know and your listeners know, it's held out in the open air, it's held in open fields, and thanks be to God, we still have enough land and plenty fields and plenty space. There seems to be no issue whatsoever. I was actually there last year on the Wednesday. They said there was about 110,000, 120,000 there. There could be up to 200,000 there, because we take all the people that stand in and all the people who supply in, people who work in it. And so definitely I feel, and when I saw it in the paper first, numerous people contacted me. We brought it up on our last county council, Cork County Council meeting, and we decided to write to the NPA, National Ploughing, and to ask them, all we are calling for is, I think they should pause it. I think it's a step too far. And I see no reason, because we have a lot of older people. They are loyal supporters down to the year. No discussion whatsoever. And there's a certain section of the community now, I feel, and my other council friends feel, that they're going to be denied access, because some other people wouldn't have got cards, they haven't got bank accounts, they haven't got checks, they haven't got that facility. So what I'm saying is this, would they look at it for this year and a couple of years, say, put in at least one or two gates where a person, if they have a card, they could swipe. Like you've got a knock now, there was a knock there recently, you can swipe your card on the way out.
What I don't understand, it doesn't make sense, the reasons given, because the Assistant Managing Director of the National Ploughing Championship says they've done this on the back of a demand from the emergency services to know how many people are attending each day. Now, it's not very difficult to see what the maximum number might be. You just look at it historically, and that number could fluctuate greatly dependent on the weather as well. I'm not buying that. I'm not saying anyone's lying or anything. But look, I think if you look over the years, you look at the weather, you know, there is a bit of spontaneity there and people going or not going. So, in other words, if they sell 10,000 tickets, you know, there might be 7,000 that buy tickets and an extra 7,000. The point I'm trying to make, and I'm not making it very well here, is that I'm not buying the fact that the emergency services want to know how many is going to be at it, because it's a rough number that would fluctuate whether they buy the tickets in advance or not.
Well, I'd love to see the demand where it is written, or whoever thought about it, because I don't think it was members. If you book a ticket now online, and they consider it, I see no reason why they can't consider that. They have a fair reason. They could have a fair number. But if you buy a ticket now, say for the Tuesday, it's normally held on the Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. It's a very, very successful event. It's gone, everyone loves to attend, and it's showing off what we have good in rural Ireland, especially from the farming community. And it's great to meet the town people and the urban and the city people, dweller, and the rural Ireland together. But if you buy a ticket off a Tuesday, and God forbid if there's an accident in the morning, or you have to take your neighbour to the hospital, or something happened, you're an animal sick, or a horse sick, or a sheep sick, and you couldn't go, you now lose that. If you can't go on the Tuesday, you can't use that ticket on a Wednesday. She made that quite clear yesterday. You can't use it on a Thursday. So maybe it is another way of making money. But I personally feel is they can bring in that system, but they should facilitate people, older people who may not have cabs. Cash is still legal tender in this country, and now may continue. But I think it's a step too far. And the big thing I see here, no discussion whatsoever, no consultation. Maybe now they think they're gone so far above they can just ride over roughshod. I personally feel it. Continue with their system if they're on the book of the nine, but at the same time, is have one or two gates where a card can be used or cash can be used and try it out for a couple of years. I don't think there's too much to ask.
Yeah, I mean, you'd never want to lose touch with your support base. And it's like this radio station, it's like any organisation, the same with the Ploughing Championships. It is nothing without the people that support it. They really need to be careful here that they don't shoot the golden goose here, because as you say quite rightly...
I would ask the board, at this stage, I'd ask the National Ploughing Board and its managing director, would they kindly look at the system again? It's a step too far. There's no discussion whatsoever. Are they now going to deny? Because this is the silent majority out there. A lot of these people would not crave a picture phone and give out to the local radio station or the local paper, but they have come to me, Frank, on the ground. What in the name of God is that in this country? Are we gone absolutely crazy? We have plenty open land. We have plenty room there for car parking. If a person now decides and they choose that the winds of the tolls that to go and they haven't got a book, are they going to arrive above and be sent home? I don't want to go up and climb over the ditch if they have to. I think the National Song got absolutely gone, as I said, a step too far. No consultation, no discussion, but in the system. Are they listening to their supporters, their loyal supporters? I definitely think as a local councillor in County Cork and as mayor of the County of Cork, Frank O'Flynn, I don't think they're doing it. And I, by the number of calls I'm getting in the past couple of days since we brought up at the Cork County Council, we've written the request to them now, and I'd love to see the reply we get.
And it would be lovely too if sometimes an organisation read the room and thought, well, you know, maybe we didn't read the room correctly and maybe we should do the right thing here. I don't hold out much hope that that might happen, but I'll tell you, there are people that won't or won't go or won't be able to go because they don't like using cards either online or even in person for that matter, and they want to use their cash, and some people aren't going to be happy. Mayor of Cork County, Councillor Frank O'Flynn, thank you so much for your time. Sorry for misnaming you at the beginning, but we got there in the end, and we look forward to welcoming you.
And I still look forward to my good friends up in that part of the country, go meet him at the Ploughing Championships. This is our annual pilgrimage, this is our annual holiday. Long may it continue. And I plead at this stage with the National Ploughing, where they kindly listen to what the people on the ground are saying.
Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your day. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text. What do you think? Now, do you have an issue in your relationship where fobbing is a thing? And do you think it could be disruptive to your relationship? Well, that's what a study found. Fobbing is where you fob off your partner because you're on your phone. We're going to be discussing that and more after we take this break. Stay right where you are. All right, so a study found regular fobbing could be damaging marriages and relationships, of course, intimate relationships, because, you know, you're sitting beside someone and maybe one or both are on the phone. You're snubbing your partner in favour of this online world. Mary Johnston's a specialist in counselling, marriage and relationships with Accord, and joins us now. Mary, lovely to have you on the programme. How are you keeping?
Yes, great, Greg. Thank you. It's nice to be on your programme. Thank you for inviting us.
Do you think fobbing is a symptom of a problem in a relationship or something that may cause problems in a relationship?
I think it's probably something. It can be a bit of both, but I suppose it's what struck me about it is probably a new word for many of us, but it's actually not a new behaviour. I think the word came into being in about 2012 in Australia. So it's, you know, about ignoring the person you're in person with in favour of being on your phone or your devices. And I suppose it can be a habit. You know, people can have a habit and they're doing that. And if it's not drawn to their attention and if they don't make changes, definitely it can cause, you know, as it goes on, it can cause problems in relationships. And also, I suppose, if a relationship is in a difficult space, in some instances, it may be more likely to happen. When people come to us on their first session, we look with them at issues that come up in their relationship. So we've looked, and it can come up under problem behaviours. So I looked back on some of our stats, and in 2021, 15% of the clients who came to us in 2021 said that their own or their partner's use of phone, texting, internet or social media always or often cause problems. So that was 2021. In 2022, it went up by 2%. So we had 17% of the clients that come to us and they reported that their own use or their partner's use of phone, internet or social media caused problems. Now, that's, we're asking a wide question there. And in 2023, gone down 1% from 2022 to 16%. That's kind of a broader question, and it takes in activity on the internet and social media.
Yeah, so someone
media
could
as well.
Be up in the office or on their laptop in a different room, and that would sort of fall under this. But still, it's a significant thing. But it's an accumulative situation, I would imagine, that it only over time maybe starts to grate or becomes a problem. It's not irreversible in any case, but I think particularly if it's just the seeds of annoyance are being planted.
Yeah, it's not irreversible at all. I mean, if you think, I mean, which of us maybe hasn't concentrated on a device? And I mean, you might see it happening in the workplace. It happens in couples' relationships. And, you know, you can make changes, I suppose. The best thing for somebody to do if it is annoying them is to bring it up with their partner and say, look, when you're doing this, I don't feel listened to, or I'd like you to look at me when you're listening to me. The worst thing to do would, I suppose, be sort of berating them and saying, look at you, you never do anything else, you're always at this and you're very difficult. And, you know, so I think it's to come from your own feelings and what you need, because you can feel quite disrespected if you've had that experience with anybody where you're talking to them and you note from their eyes and their activity that they're more zoned in on their device than they are with you. So that's not a good experience.
And that evokes an emotion, a basic emotion, going, I must be so uninteresting that this infinite scrolling that you're doing is more interesting to listen to what I have to say. I mean, and that I think anyone would most people, sorry, would find that over time, if not instantly, upsetting and degrading and annoying, and whichever word would suit the situation.
It would. I think you could feel quite dismissed. You could feel quite disrespected. You could feel, look, I don't matter, or, you know, he or she or whoever is just not interested in what I'm saying. And that's not a good message in a relationship. We need to feel that our partner is interested in us, wants to pay attention to us, is curious. You know, there may be, I suppose, you know, if something like that happens once off or now and again, but if it's constantly happening and it's becoming more and more, happening more and more, of course it's going to cause absolutely.
And I suppose in a meeting with a counselling service, you dig into it a little bit. Maybe it's escapism. Maybe the person is, you know, that is where they're escaping into the online world. Maybe they work from home, or their phone's important to work, and they're struggling with stress at work or to strike a work-life balance. It's not always just, you know, liking dog pictures on Facebook.
No,
either. It's
absolutely
complex, isn't it?
And yeah. It's not always, like, sometimes people maybe can be disrespectful or dismissive and they may not realise it. And when it's brought to their attention, that gives them an opportunity to do something about it. So, you know, you need to give somebody a chance. But people can be under pressure from work, or they can be a bit absent-minded, or, you know, sometimes there are, I suppose, you know, conditions that somebody may, you know, be very impulsive, or they may find it very hard to focus, you know, and it could be something like that. But it definitely needs to be addressed and spoken about, and efforts made to change it, because it won't help the quality of the relationship at all.
Yeah, and we do a sort of a segment whereby we try and help listeners with their relationship questions. And the answer, a lot of the time, is simple, is to express how you feel, to find a way in which you can have the conversation at the right time in a non-confrontational way, and to say that this, what's happening is making me feel like this. But it's that what we struggle with. We're often ring a phone line, chat to a friend, or send a text into a radio station before we'll have that conversation. Is it because we're afraid it might lead to a row or open up a bigger can of worms? Or, you know, why are we so afraid to express our feelings until such point as we're at tipping or breaking point?
I suppose, you know, sometimes we've had the experience it didn't go down well before. We said, look, when you do this, I feel this way. And we got up, for God's sake, don't be so fussy, or don't be so, you know, sensitive. So we could have got a bad reaction initially. Sometimes in relationships, we mightn't feel it might go down well, so we might pull away from it. But really, really, I think to make yourself and to try and get yourself into the mode, I need to bring it up, and I need to bring it up at a reasonable time and in the best possible way. And do not bring it up with a personal criticism of the person who's doing it. Try and stick to the behavior. This behavior is upsetting me. I'm feeling dismissed. I'm feeling disrespected. I really would like it to change it, rather than you're always in every, you know, that won't.
Or even approach
the other person
as,
is likely to be defensive then.
Yeah, and you can even approach it. Look, I've noticed we are both inclined to blah, 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 right? So what can couples put in place to sort of bring the phone, the laptop out of the scenario and, you know, to maybe allow conversation about how was your day or how are you feeling? What's advice do you offer there, Mary?
Yeah, I suppose it's all about having boundaries, isn't it? You know, and for a couple to agree, when are the times that we won't, you know, the times that we might have coffee or we might go for a walk or we might have something to eat at home or whatever it is. They're, you know, to look at the times that will suit your schedule and your lifestyle so that we won't always have these devices, so that it suits everybody. And I think, you know, that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, indeed. And what I was going to say to you is that what about then, if it does it matter if it's in, actually I'll park that because I was going to broaden this out a little bit. I know your focus is on marriage and relationships, and relationships are those with your sons and daughters.
Yes.
We have to, you know, we also have to make sure that we allow space to get the head out of the laptops and the phones and talk to our young people as well, and vice versa.
Absolutely. And in those cases, Greg, too, we have to do a little bit of, as parents or as adults, if we're working with adolescents or if we have, you know, adult children, we need to do a bit of good modelling as well. Like, there's no point in me saying, oh, you mustn't do this, or you mustn't do that, or you mustn't do the other, when all I model is that I'm doing it. So in terms of younger people, you know, if what they see, they may do. So we need to be, you know, we need to look at ourselves as well. I mean, I think you brought up a good point there about it could be the two of us. You know, we need to say, this is difficult for me when you do this, but we need to be conscious. What's difficult for you when I do something? So we need to be open to looking at ourselves, and we need to be open to model for young people if we want them to behave in a particular way. But look, I would encourage couples, if you feel things have gotten too difficult and you just can't talk about things, I think it's important to go for professional counselling. We've two centres in Donegal, one in Letterkenny and one in Carndonagh, and we also offer online counselling. You can get all the information on our website, www.accord.ie.
Yeah, and it's one of those issues that both are likely, not exclusively, to be in the same boat. Both parties are probably guilty of this, and both will benefit from a little bit of. Okay, Mary, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Mary Johnson, specialist in counselling, marriage and relationships with Accord. Does that resonate with you? 086 60 25000. I broke up with my ex 6 years ago, Greg, over phone use. We would land home from work and she could spend 2 to 3 hours on Facebooks in silence. She wouldn't even discuss it. I can only imagine how bad it would be now with all the extra social medias, says that listener there. Does this charge apply to buses as well? Well, I asked that, and John seemed to suggest there was an exemption. A caller says, this is a Donegal lorry tax. How many of the other 25 free state counties, as they describe it, have to go through the northern 6 counties to travel or do business? Only 6 miles of Donegal touches the free state, so Donegal export business is disadvantaged. Brilliant idea, a tax that targets Donegal. It's amazing how quiet our politicians are, but should we have to do as we're told? Get a big sign up in Lifford, Slán, from Donegal. Okay, yeah, I mean, it can feel like that, given our geographical position. Our government, after giving 10 million to nursing in Northern Ireland and millions to another service last week, and they sit back and do nothing for these drivers. What's going on? Greg, about the ploughing, it's all about the government controlling us, but we need cash. More people should use cash. If it's only a card, we as a family won't be doing it this year, or won't be going this year. Well, you see, I mean, it's not the government's fault. This is a private organisation that have decided to make this decision themselves. Like, people blame the government for an awful lot of stuff, but a lot of it is private business organisations, independent organisations making these decisions themselves for their own reason. In fact, in fairness to the government, it's the government that's introducing or has introduced a strategy to establish cash as in its rightful place as a legal tender to ensure there's a minimum number of ATMs and so on and so forth. That's a government initiative. This is the ploughing that's done this. So listen, I'm all for criticising the government where possible, and you could argue maybe they're doing enough, but it is they that are working through some protocols or whatever you might call them to enshrine cash and its future use. It's the GEA, which is independent. It is the ploughing championship, it's the three arena, all independent organisations that are making those decisions themselves. Find it hard to believe, Greg, that you're not aware of the protest in Balbriggan, especially as the position you hold in the media. My mother in her late 80s and is aware of them. Do you not research things, or is it just the blind eye? Again, though, the original message was that there are refugees protesting in Balbriggan. Is that what it was? That's what the first text read like. Am I aware of it? No. Am I across social media? Yes. Is it possible I'm not following the accounts that might share that video? Yeah, it is likely. But thanks for your review nonetheless. Now, new legislation comes into effect today as part of the government's action plan for insurance reform. The law aims to rebalance the duty of care between occupiers, such as businesses, community groups and organisers of events and visitors, recreational users and trespassers. Brian Hanley, CEO of Alliance for Insurance Reform, he joins us now. Is this, Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Is this reform in the way the Alliance would like to see?
Yes, we very much welcome the commencement of the legislation and see it as a common sense and proportionate rebalancing of the duty of care between occupiers and those that attend their premises and the members of the public that do. As you've alluded to already, it stands to make a difference to right across society, from small businesses to community and voluntary groups and charities to sporting organisations. The changes in the legislation itself, I think there are three particular areas of note. The first being that it essentially requires people coming onto another person's property to exercise a reasonable degree of care for their own safety. You know, that the onus is on them to be responsible for their own actions. It doesn't do away with a duty of the occupier, you know, if there's a hazard on their premises and they're reckless about it. But what it does say is it asks people to take a degree of personal responsibility for their actions. The second area that it addresses is the legislation further restricts the circumstances in which trespassers may pursue a successful claim. And the third area is what we call the voluntary assumption of risk. And basically what this means is that where people want to undertake a pastime or an activity that might have a slightly higher degree of risk than otherwise, if they do so knowingly and then something were to happen through an accident and no fault of anybody else's, well, it doesn't make sense that or wouldn't be fair for them to go and to take a claim. The example I give there might be in the context of a five-a-side soccer match. So if I went out this evening and assuming the pitch and the conditions and everything are fine, there's always a risk that I'm going to injure myself making a tackle this evening. And I don't think anyone would suggest it's fair or reasonable that then I would stand to take a claim against the business owner because I mistimed a tackle and was unfortunate enough to hurt myself.
But will the proof of the pudding not really be then as through time as we see what claims come forward, how they're treated, how the courts might treat them? Like, that's really where precedent will be set. So that remains to be seen, I presume. I could be wrong, Brian.
Two aspects on that. Absolutely right. I mean, what's needed now is a whole of society effort here to get behind the changes and what they stand for. And that's very much part of our own Enough is Enough campaign, that really there needs to be an end to these unjustifiable claims. But then how they're interpreted and dealt with by all the stakeholders that deal with these types of claims will be really important. It's but to say, I think as well, that we have to wait a period of years probably wouldn't be wholly accurate either, because arguably a significant element in determining premiums, insurance premiums, has to do with the likelihood of claims being made against businesses. Well, as of the commencement today, the risk profile for those organisations has now changed considerably. And that ought to be borne out immediately in the liability premiums that organisations are now looking for. And if it's not, I think serious questions would have to be asked of government and indeed of the insurance companies themselves.
They'll have to be seen to be acting, in other words. And there are certain areas that it's more difficult to get insurance. There are a limited number of players in those markets, or not at all. Often it would be coming from Britain or elsewhere. Do you think that maybe insurance companies might look at the Irish market now and say, right, okay, maybe we can, you know, make a few quid in that market, and maybe more competition or certain areas that are currently struggling to get insurance might into the future?
Oh, I think the insurance market in Ireland is a much more attractive place with the passage of this legislation, but also, or the commencement of it, but also from the other reforms that have taken place in recent years. So, for example, the Book of Quantum was replaced by the Judicial Guidelines, which are much more specific and targeted in the amounts of awards. And the awards, there's less scope and variation, so they're more targeted in the amount of compensation that's awarded, better reflects injuries and has come down overall as a global percentage. the number of claims that go through year on year, and various reports in the Central Bank and the Personal Injuries Assessment Board show in many instances the number of claims are down in excess of 40% in some categories. And lastly then, there have been the Garda Insurance Fraud Unit was established. So there's really been a whole of society approach to addressing it. And I would suggest the market is a much more attractive one for insurance companies. This is something we have spoken to Minister Carol McNeill about. And I know that the IDA have been tasked with attracting additional competition to the market. This is particularly needed in the area of public liability insurance, less so in motor.
I know. You said that insurance companies should react immediately, but you in your own press release state the new legislation will only work if it's implemented in the spirit it was intended by the judiciary, insurers, the legal profession, and ultimately by the Irish public. So, I mean, insurance companies can be hard to change their mindsets. They are going, you might not want them to, but they are going to wait to see how this plays out, because I presume they set their, do they not set their charges on you know, past claims rather than, you know, future risk?
Absolutely. So there's a mix of reasons that are often put forward one over the other. And if you look and you give an example of past claims and so on, that's why we're really looking at the whole area of unjustifiable claims, because I spoke to somebody last week and they had a claim hanging over their business for 9 years. Mm. 9 years.
They had similar calls here, yep.
And premiums, only for the case to be dismissed the minute it went to court or was put in front of a body. And it's those types of claims that are hanging over excessively for years. And that's why, again, solutions such as PIAB are really welcome, because they provide for more prompt address of compensation where it's appropriate and necessary.
Yeah, and I mean, we have heard the cases, I don't know how rare they are or not, but they certainly grab the headlines, where someone breaks into someone else's premises and then ends up being compensated. I don't think there's a person in the country other than the person that might be inclined to break in and seek compensation that thinks that makes any sense whatsoever. It's hard to believe it took to 2023 for us to address that issue.
Yeah, and it's very welcome that it has. The legislation does address that, and liability will not now be imposed on an occupier if the injured person committed the offence on the premises, unless a court determines otherwise. So they really have tightened that whole area up. And as you said yourself, I think that's something that would be welcomed by the vast majority of people.
Okay, I would love to think that as of tomorrow, everyone's premiums right across the country would start tumbling. I'm not sure that might be the case, but at least now there's tougher questions can be asked into the future if it's not the case and as to why not. Brian, thank you so much for your time.
Appreciate it. And it's important we keep asking those questions. Thanks very much.
For sure, definitely. Brian Hanley, CEO of Alliance for Insurance Reform. So we shall see what impact that might make. A caller says, as it relates to that £10 sterling levy, isn't this the reason some local companies moved their companies into Derry? I know for a fact at least some did. Yes, for sure. A caller says, I agree fully with Mark McSharry. Okay, very good. Another, and Vera Pau is unfair. A restrained adjective. She should at least stop Amber today. After all, they would not be at the World Cup had it not been for Amber's goal. I hope her contract is not renewed. Well, Amber did feature in the last game, albeit thrown in a way that probably she couldn't have the impact she would have otherwise had. But I suppose a team maybe too has to be set up a certain way to best maximise Amber's talents if she's starting in an advanced position. But we shall see. Who's to say what might come, what stories might come from Australia down the line. Kevin in Dunlow, here's another DL connection with the Dublin manager. Desi Farrell's mother, as far as I know, Ballyshannon. All right, okay. Including Michael Dara McCauley, Letcher. Sadly, Clifford didn't climb to his potential, being marked by Marion's cousin, I believe. Maybe Oisin knows the rest of the connections, but I suppose a lot of people went to Dublin for work and ended up raising a family there indeed. Of course, it was a form of internal migration that would have happened. Right, we're heading into the next hour of the programme after the news. We're going to take a quick break first. Brendan Devaney is going to be joining us with a look forward to what's coming up on this evening's DL Debate.